At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to Let's Talk Midlife Crisis. I'm Ashley.
And I'm Tracy. We're your go-to hosts for all things midlife, menopause, and moments of pure mayhem. And today we're going to talk about dementia.
And things we can do in midlife to slow or prevent it. So I have two sources in my research, the first one is Hopkins Bloomberg Public Health Magazine. The other one is Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. So some of this I'm going to just touch on, and some of it I'm going to read line by line because I don't want to miss, there's been a lot of research on this and I don't want to miss anything important. But by 2050, almost one in four adults will be over 65. From age 55 to 95, the lifetime risk of developing dementia is 42%. That's amounting to about 1 million cases annually by 2060, which is almost double the current cases reported. Well, the cases reported in 2020, that was 514,000. So today, it actually affects 6 million Americans. So this is like a really serious disease that there's no cure.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I haven't found a cure for this yet. Yeah.
Those numbers are crazy.
It's terrible. I know. They're staggering. And many researchers are instead focusing on like identifying preventative measures or early warning signs. So I know now, like even in your midlife, you could get some like testing done to determine whether or not you have early signs of it or if eventually you will have it, you know. A lot of researchers, they did a study, they analyzed data between 1987 and 2020, and I'm going to just use the abbreviation short abbreviation for this study because the words I can't really say, but it's an ARIC study, and again, you can find this in our resources. It's tracked nearly 16,000 people for three decades in four different communities to investigate the risk factors for heart disease and more recently the connections between cardiovascular and cognitive health. So they're finding that there's a lot of similarities and, you know, things that are causing cognitive health what if you have, you know, cardiovascular risk or issues. The findings present an opportunity to address dementia risk factors and take steps in middle age to prevent or slow the onset of it later in life. Okay. If you live long enough, your risk increases, obviously, right. Which may be higher than we previously thought. And society struggles to help people who need intensive long-term care. So this is a real issue.
Oh.
And I know you've had a little bit of experience with this. I think your mom had some issues with this, right?
Yeah, my mom had Alzheimer's, and I just can't tell you the emotional and financial toll that it takes on individuals and families. I think
it's hard for both the patient and, like you said, the family, because, and I mean emotionally, because, you know, for the patient, there's probably a lot of confusion about why people are confused about what they're saying or doing, you know, and you're confused because they don't recognize you or they're calling you different names or, you know, things like that. And so, yeah, like, you know, it is obviously a financial toll if they need long-term care, but emotionally, this is very challenging for families.
Yes.
So what they have found in this research they've done, there are things that you can do on an individual level to reduce the burden of dementia, including trying to optimize your cardiovascular health. And that's, you know, things like avoiding diabetes, hypertension, smoking. This also was another flag for me. Oh, I guess it's time to quit.
I don't think there's anything that's good that comes out of smoking.
Comes from smoking,
yeah,
no.
Yeah, unfortunately.
But the more I do this research, I'm like, oh, I'm really getting nervous. Okay. Anyway, focusing on a healthy lifestyle, improving heart health, it will have important benefits to your brain health and preventing dementia or slowing it down.
Yeah. And prevention matters, right? Prevention matters.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and we've talked a lot about the importance of a healthy lifestyle, whether you're eating healthy, being active, and mostly we've talked about the importance of that for your mental health, you know, physical too, but it's really important for your brain health. We start seeing different regions of the brain show signs of damage earlier on. When you have diabetes, there's evidence that your brain starts undergoing neurodegeneration at a much faster rate than if you don't have this condition. So obviously there's people that are born with diabetes, you know, take care of yourself, manage it the best you can. But a lot of people don't develop it until later in life. And there are things you can start doing in your 30s and 40s and 50s to prevent getting that, which is going to be very, very imperative to your cognitive health.
Right.
And part of that is maintaining a healthy weight, which is essential to preventing type 2 diabetes, being active, eating a healthy diet with lots of fruits and vegetables, not smoking, or quitting smoking if you're a current smoker. Obviously, that's going to affect your cardiovascular health. A lot of people are worried about genetic risk. One important genetic risk factor is having... this is really hard for me to say. It's an APOE4 allele. I think it's a test.
Okay.
For the gene. Mm-hmm. So if you carry the gene and you have high risk of being that, you can be tested for that. But they've shown that a diagnosis of diabetes in midlife has a similar effect as having one of those,
yeah,
whatever that is.
Yeah.
So it's just the same as if you have a genetic risk.
And I can definitely attest to the genetics of it because, as we just talked about, my mom had it, her mom had it, her brother had it, and I actually was adopted at birth.
Right.
So I feel fortunate that I didn't pick up that genetic gene, but mentally, it's still in the back of my mind, though. It's funny how that works, but definitely it is in genetics. It has been proven.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I know it's in my family as well. My grandmother, I think both of them had it, and they both lived out of state. And so I didn't see them often. So for me, it's easy to say, I don't think it was an extreme case, but I don't know because I wasn't involved day to day, you know? Mm-hmm. So for me, it's really easy to say, oh, it wasn't extreme. I haven't heard all the details of that from the people that were, you know, caring for them. I do know my grandma, oh, she was so sweet. She would call me to try to reach my mom who lived in another different state. And she would say, hi, Ashley, is your mom home? And she never called me Ashley growing up, ever. She always called me Princess. So as soon as she started calling me Ashley, I was like crushed. I was like, I thought she honestly didn't even know my real name.
Right.
Because she called me Princess. And so I would just say, you know, my mom's in the shower. I'll have her call you when she gets out. And then I would call my mom in Utah and say, Grandma's trying to reach you. And so she would call her. And so I saw signs like that, mm-hmm. but obviously, like I said, I wasn't involved day to day, so yeah. I didn't have to endure the, you know, a lot of the emotional and, you know, trials and things like that and physical,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah, 100%. So when my grandmother had it, I was younger. And even though we both lived in the same state, I wasn't in as much communication with her towards the end. I remember being very upset with my mom and my uncle, who my uncle was living in her house, but they put her in a home, and I didn't understand it at the time about the care she would need at that stage that she was in. And I just remember being upset about it and honestly quite resentful over it. Then my uncle had it. I was somewhat... Again, he lived in the same state, so I did see him, not as regular, of course, as I should have, but he also was put into a memory care facility towards the end. But then with my mom, whole different story. She ended up moving to California, and so she lived in another state, was married, and she went undiagnosed. So she, when it was unfortunate that it was the time where I had to bring her to Arizona, was because my dad had surgery and she couldn't be left there alone. I had young children. I couldn't stay there for that extended period of time. So I ended up having to bring her to Arizona, and that's where she ended up staying. I ended up having to put her into a private home with caregivers to take care of her because I was a single mom with young children. And honestly, I don't know how I made it through, but with her, it was, I saw everything and I didn't realize the horror of the degenerative disease. And again, hers was Alzheimer's. I think there's a lot of parallels between dementia and Alzheimer's.
I think there's a lot of similarities,
But she, at the end, just like her body was, her organs, things just started giving out. So it was horrific. And I'm the baby, right? So this had fallen on my shoulders. And I wouldn't wish that on anyone, to be quite honest. So,
that's terrible. Yeah, I mean, like I said, that it's really a struggle to help people who need intensive long-term care. And that's a really hard decision, I'm sure it was for you with your mom, to take that step and figure out where you're going to take them and who's going to care for them. I'm sure that in itself is a daunting task.
Yeah, and especially because
make sure you pick the right facility.
Yeah. Well, and she was from out of state, so her insurance, I had to transfer her insurance over. I was actually, I honestly don't even remember who suggested it at the time, but they told me to take her to an emergency room because she hadn't been diagnosed either. So I took her to an emergency room when they gave me this laundry list of care facilities that would help. And I found an angel. Her name was Daniela, is Daniela. And by the grace of God, she helped me and took her in and was able to then get her to the doctor and then get her on medication. At this point, it was perhaps too late to really slow it down that much, but she was able to take care of her, get her on medication, get her to the doctor, and it was close by. So, but yeah, I don't think a lot of people knew. I don't honestly remember who said, hey, take her to the emergency room. But if you're in a situation and you don't know what to do, take them to the emergency room.
I've heard that a lot of times for different situations, because it's kind of like a great way to get like your referral as far as insurance goes, you know, and whether it's a diagnosis or a referral or whatever it is.
Or all the above.
And people, yeah, for a lot of different things, even people with like addiction issues, they say go to the emergency room first, because that's going to make it easier to get into a facility if that's what you're looking to do to get help, you know?
Right. Yes. Yes. Correct.
So yeah, if you can't think of anything else, go to the emergency room.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, there's a lot of different things. She became at times combative, but only if you know, became disoriented, if you will. Right. I remember one time we were at the grocery store and she was hanging on to the shopping cart, and they, at that time, they were bagging the groceries, so they pulled the shopping cart back, but they switched out the carts, and she became combative at that time, just because of that.
Confusion.
Yeah. And the confusion, so.
I've heard that. I've heard they can get combative. One of the interesting things I also found was that maintaining hearing is also important or maintaining cognitive function. Mm-hmm. I can't say that word. a study demonstrated that a hearing aid intervention in older adults at high risk for dementia was associated with less cognitive decline over 3 years than those without hearing aids.
Yeah.
That is so interesting to me.
And do you know what I learned a while ago? I did a little job hopper, and I worked in-house for a hearing aid company, as you might recall. But I didn't even realize it at the time until they told me. But when you age and you lose your hearing, you also, like you were mentioning about cognitive, you also, you lose your speech because of that as well.
Right.
So
right.
I never even connected
too,
those dots.
Like even like comprehension skills, my son had some ear issues growing up and wasn't speaking by the time he was 3 the way I thought he should be. Mm-hmm. And so I took him in, and sure enough, he couldn't hear the dial tone on a telephone, which is why he was speaking. He was speaking the way he was because he was reading lips, not because he could hear.
Yeah.
And he had some issues once he got into school with comprehension because of that loss of hearing. Mm-hmm. And I would think that the same could be even when you're older, that you kind of lose those skills. But these studies are showing that it also is imperative to your cognitive health.
Yeah.
And I think there are, I can vouch, personally, my stepdad for the longest time refused to get a hearing aid, which also can be very trying on the family because you get frustrated saying stuff to them over and over again and they can't hear you and then you're screaming it and it's just frustrating, you know? And for the longest time, he refused to do it. Mm-hmm. It was just, I think a lot of it is vanity, and which is fair.
Yeah. They're kind of small nowadays, but not
are.
As noticeable.
And once he discovered that, once he discovered how little they were and he can literally manage it from his, so he finally decided to do it and it's been a game changer for both him and my mom, their relationship. But I think that's very common. I think it's common for people to avoid doing that as long as they can.
Yeah. And then my dad, once he got the hearing aids, half the time he wouldn't wear them. And it was like, oh my gosh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Plus, they're very expensive. So
they are. They are.
Mm-hmm.
But they're worth it.
Yes, they are. They are.
Untangling relationships among sleep, physical activity, and brain health may suggest ways to reduce dementia risk as well. So again, these are things that we've talked about: sleep, physical activity,
diet.
This is kind of a fact that they threw in as far as Alzheimer's, which your mom had. Mm-hmm. An estimated 1 in 9 people over the age of 65 have Alzheimer's. One in nine.
That's crazy.
You put 10 people in a room and someone has Alzheimer's. Yeah. That's crazy.
It
That's
has to be mom. Something that we're ingesting or, exposed to.
I think a lot of it really is lifestyle because, you hit midlife and I think that a lot of people, I think it's changing now, but I think a lot of people don't work out like they used to. They're not as physical. And you don't have to work out like you used to. You just still need to be active, do something active.
Yeah. But especially as you get older, right?
Right.
In your 60s and such.
Really watching your diet, preventing diabetes or, any kind of cardiovascular issues. Just being really cognizant of that at an age where you can make it work, make it happen. Mm-hmm. When you're in your 30s and 40s, you can really make an effect on what's going to happen to you in the future.
100%, yes.
And I think a lot of people didn't realize that. And, your lifestyle changes, you slow down, you become less aware of what you're eating. It's just like whatever,
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I think it is changing, but I think that's kind of that was the norm.
Yeah. And exercise, we've talked about that. We've talked about
yoga.
Physical
activity and sleep are quick to change when your cognitive impairment starts. So even if you have the gene or early signs of it, if you maintain your physical activity and, make sure you're getting enough sleep, it can actually delay your symptoms. Mm-hmm. And obviously the longer you live, the more likely you're going to get those symptoms if it's inevitable. But more than 2 decades of research supports the notion that staying active helps prevent cognitive decline. One analysis found that higher levels of physical activity may decrease dementia by as much as 18%.
Wow.
That's significant. Yeah.
That makes me want to get out there and take a walk. Even just a 30-minute walk makes a difference.
Absolutely.
Could make a difference, we'll say. Yeah.
Yeah. Exercise spurs the body to produce important proteins such as brain-derived neurotrophic, I hope I said that right, factor. It helps the brain cells stay healthy and form new connections. Mm. Exercise also causes the heart to pump harder and pump more blood throughout the body. So again, brain and heart health. In studies analyzing the energy needed for older adults to walk, this is interesting, a useful measure of physical fitness. There are these doctors, I'm going to slaughter their names, Shrak and Wani Gatunga. They found that those who struggled to walk were also more likely to show signs of brain deterioration and cognitive decline later in life.
Okay.
And higher levels of amyloid beta, which is a protein whose accumulation can signal Alzheimer's. So, again, there tended to be a lot of, a lot less activity in midlife and older. And that's also going to affect your ability to walk because your muscles have weakened, mm-hmm. your joints have stiffened, and that's also going to affect your brain.
Yeah.
And obviously your heart. So there, it's more than just dementia and Alzheimer's. It's overall health.
Yeah.
Like low levels of physical activity, poor quality of sleep is also associated with higher dementia risk. People with sleep disturbances such as insomnia or sleep apnea are 19% more likely to develop dementia. 19% more.
Wow.
That's crazy. And I know that sleep apnea is very common in mid to late life.
My dad had it. But he lived to 92 and his mind was sharp. So,
But if you have it, it's treatable. Mm-hmm. They have the breathing machines and things like that. So
he didn't use it. He's so
like I have a fat tongue.
Yeah.
there's ways to do. If you feel like you're having issues with anything, talk to your doctor.
Yeah.
There's going to be symptoms. As long as you're doing something about it, and treating it the way you should, your health is going to be better. Your mind is going to be better. And these are things we can start doing now, mm-hmm. Before we get to be elders and really face a lot of struggles.
Yeah. Excessive alcohol too is probably increasing risk, right? It's kind of a given, but.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the forms of sleep, or I guess levels of sleep, is called slow wave sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And missing out on that, which is it's the deepest stage where your body repairs itself from the day.
Oh, so it's like it's one of your REMs, right?
Yes, it's associated with, so missing out on that is associated with the buildup of this amyloid beta, which is, like I said, the protein whose accumulation can trigger Alzheimer's or dementia.
Mm-hmm.
In turn, the brain changes associated with Alzheimer's disease themselves also to Alzheimer's disease themselves also seem to disturb sleep. So, disrupting and synchronized brain waves that characterize deep sleep, that's affected if you're not getting that level, that slow wave sleep.
Right.
And it just creates a vicious cycle, I noticed this too. If I'm sleeping well for a while and then I have like one night of not sleeping well, it's like the next 3 or 4 nights, I'm doomed.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sleep well. It's like this cycle that my body goes through.
Mm-hmm.
It's terrible.
And I think you're thinking about it at that point too. Like, oh, am I going to be able to sleep?
Well, you're dreading. You're like, okay, I don't want another night like last night,
Yeah. Right. Where anyway, you should be so tired that you would just pass out. But
You would think, yeah. I mean, there was one night I was up at like 3:30. And could not go back to sleep. And I made it all day. I thought, I am going to crash so hard this afternoon. Never did.
Yeah.
And then didn't sleep well that night either. So yeah, it's really important. And actually, because that was happening, I bought an eye mask. Mm-hmm. So if you're struggling with, and it was so weird because our room is pretty dark, you know, and we have, like I said, the sound machine going. So we do what we can to make sure, to ensure that we're getting deep sleep and this good sleep. But sometimes I just don't, it's just my body. And I thought, well, what if I get an eye mask? Maybe that, you know, because I even though our room's pretty dark, I would notice the slightest bit of light, whether it was coming out of the door or, you know.
Yeah.
And it really helped. I've used it several times.
I've been putting a pillow, because I'm a side sleeper, but I've been putting a pillow over my head in the morning because, like, I'll hear Tatum up, you know, getting ready for work, and then she's in the kitchen. But by putting that pillow over my head, it's perhaps the light as well, but for the sound, yes.
Yeah, and they do have, you know, there's a lot of things you can do as far as, like, sound, too. They have some really nice earplugs now.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of them can be really uncomfortable, but they have special ones out there now that I think, for the most part, you can get in any drugstore, and they're very soft and they're very flexible, so they really kind of form to your ear, and those help too if sounds, you know, again, a lot of people live in households where, you know, the kids are up later, or maybe your partner has a different shift, or, you know, anything like that. Really important to get that good sleep, so anything you have to do to ensure that you're getting it is going to help you, your overall health, and not just currently, but in down the road.
Right.
And that was just one, you know, that was kind of the big takeaway I took from doing this research is, you know, we all have heard, you know, if you smoke, you're going to have issues when you get older. If you, you know, we hear all that stuff, but I never really thought about that, like the dementia and the Alzheimer's, you know. Obviously I knew cardiovascular health, you know,
right, the obvious things, right, and cancer, right. But not and, the strong
and
link
you don't to... realize how much the importance of your diet and your activity and your sleep are going to affect you down the road too.
Yeah.
So,
and I think it's funny because it seems like no matter what we talk about, it kind of all boils back down to that, right, the root, right, at the end of the day.
We've talked about, how it helps with, you know, menopause symptoms.
Everything, right?
Everything.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah. So taking care of your health and making sure you control your high blood pressure, diabetes, cholesterol, those types of things, any kind of hearing losses is crucial as well, on top of exercise, diet, you know, mind, you know, doing mental stimulation, right, with different
like the games.
And social engagement,
like word searches, those are all very, very good things to do from now even until you're older. And I used to always joke how my grandma was constantly doing word searches and things like that, but it's like, you know what, good for her, it's great that she did, because she did end up with dementia. And like I said, I felt like it was kind of a minor case of it. Again, I wasn't that involved, so I'm not sure how bad it got, but I guarantee that the stuff she was doing was helping, you know, especially things like that. Yeah. So if you like word searches and, you know,
I love my
Sudoku, is that how you say it? Sudoku? That's supposed to be a good one.
My kids like to play that. But so, and the role of genetics versus lifestyle, control what you can control, right? And with new technology that we have now and early detection tools, it just makes sense to be able to use them to our advantage.
One other thing that I heard that's really helpful is learning a new language. So Rosetta Stone, if you want to learn Spanish or Italian or whatever it might be, that is also supposed to really help with your mental health. And it's fun.
And it is fun. Yeah.
Well, that wraps it up for today. Thanks for joining us on Let's Talk Midlife Crisis. We hope you got some laughs, a little inspiration, and maybe a few new ideas.
If you loved today's episode, hit that subscribe button so you'll never miss an episode. And hey, share the love. Send this episode to a friend who could use a good laugh and some midlife wisdom.
Connect with us on social media at Let's Talk Midlife Crisis and let us know what's on your mind. We love hearing from you.